Small Business and Startup Stories DSM features conversations with small business owners who share both their victories and failures on their path to success. Small Business and Startup Stories DSM is produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. More tips and resources are available at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. I'm your host, Mike Caldwell.
Carl and Tori Meritz, welcome to Startup Stories. Tori, you started by looking for a problem, not, quote, we have this great product idea. Mm-hmm. What made you take this path?
So I have had other startups and other things in the past, and they never kind of seemed to work out, right? So the idea was, you know, how can we start it, come up with an idea not for what we're going to do, but how we're going to actually start a company, yeah. Right? So, I mean, you even see it in cartoons, you know, how are you going to start a company? Well, go find a problem and fill it, you know, go fix something. And it really can be that simple.
And I think it keeps people from falling in love with their idea. It's like, yeah. I have this great idea and the world needs to own it.
Right.
And that's doesn't, in fact, the number one reason startups fail these days is product market fit.
Yep. And so really that was the thing is what's the hardest problem is getting customers. So how can we get customers before we
invest building
it? Yeah.
Not only that, but sometimes when people focus too much on the idea and not the work that goes into it, then they get a little bit lost, right? Mm-hmm. Like they feel like they have this great idea that everybody's going to love, and then they release it and either they have to adjust the idea a little bit or they don't put the work in or whatever it is, and then it fails. And it's because it's more than just about the idea. It's everything that goes into it behind the scenes. It's being able to give people what they're looking for, you know, not just the idea that you have. It's about what they want.
Yeah, if they're not telling you they want it, right?
Exactly.
And selling, you know, we were trying to sell hardware products to people that were brand new to them. And so I could sit there all day and say, it can do this and it can do this. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I was making progress when the lady would say, so I could do this with this. And when they internalize that, mm-hmm. I've been known to tell people that are looking at a startup product is 20%. Mm-hmm. Your whole entire product is 20% because the rest is so important, like selling.
For sure.
So in the beginning, you were focused on securing more referrals for insurance agents. Since then, you promote other features like increasing client retention, collecting online reviews, improving client communications. Carl, what's changed? It's a lot of difference.
Yeah, well, what has changed the most is we've done a lot of research in this industry and found out what it means to have a referral for insurance agencies, right? So on the onset, and what most people think of with referrals is more of just word of mouth, like going out and, hey, Jim, do you have any friends or colleagues that you could refer me to? You know, that's a referral that most people think of it.
Okay.
But today, people go, and especially for insurance, if you're talking about like services that, not just like a pizza restaurant or something that really matters a lot, right?
Yeah, people, I need my furnace fixed.
Exactly, something like that. People can go online and they search for it now. They go on Google and they trust reviews more now than they ever did before. That's another way. So
yeah, Amazon changed our world.
Exactly, right? And so when I think of a referral, we've had to modify and change and broaden what we think of it, of what it is. So for example, for insurance agencies, if I asked somebody, hey, can you give me the name of 5 people that could use insurance right now? I don't know anybody right now that I could name, but I do know that I really like my insurance agent. So if they ask me to write them a review on Google, then I can go out there and put it on there, right?
Sure.
And that's going to reach a lot more people when the time is right for them. In a sense, it is a referral. So that's one example of how we've kind of broadened
what we do,
right?
Yeah.
We've also found through our data and research that meaningful communication, personal, frequent, touch points, but the ones not just like an email blast or something, but the personal touch. And right. We'll talk a little bit about how we've implemented that into our software. But that goes a long way, not just with word of mouth referrals, but also with retention. Our research has found that over 3 out of 4 clients of insurance agencies that are upset because of a lack of meaningful communication because they don't hear from them regularly. Right?
If the bill wasn't due, I didn't hear anything.
That's
true.
So they have this perception of indifference in their head that their agent doesn't care about them. And so when an ad comes on the air for Geico or something, they recognize they have a lower price. I might as well just go there, right? You know, what's the difference? I don't have that service anyway. So we found that it's basically all-encompassing. It's all the same. The personal communication, the meaningful touch points, the online reviews, it all it's all one successful referral strategy that also has the benefits of retention and other things built in. So we found out that we had to kind of, with the data, the research, and into the industry and actual what they were getting back from data from clients, we had to adjust and broaden what we do as a company. And so it's really not changing from referrals. It's just broadening what our idea and interpretation of a referral is, and then putting a strategy in place that also has other benefits like higher retention and other things that we can then go out and market to them because we know it's important.
Well, and those are compounding benefits. If you keep your customers longer, you tend to have them giving you more referrals. Because I know what happens to me is somebody says, hey, do you know a good an attorney that can do this kind of work? You know, then I'm going to be the referral person, right?
Absolutely.
And the more and for me, honestly, because of my position, it's more I respect their integrity as an attorney in this case or any company, the more likely I'm going to continue to refer them because
Absolutely.
I'm kind of one of these people come to and say, hey, you're a connector. Who do you know, right?
It's all revolves around that communication, that those touch points that they have to know that you care about them more than just a transactional.
Yeah.
And Tori would talk a lot about this between social norms and market norms. And you have to make that shift. I mean, people more and more today, in today's culture, when authenticity matters, when millennials are searching for alternatives to corporations and all of that corporate feel, you have to put that meaning and that feeling behind what you do. But we do it with automation. And that's the difficult part, is using automation to then also show personalization. It's a hard transition to make, but we've been able to do it. And that's one of the things that we pride in our software, is the ability to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, Tori, you and I were together the other night talking, and you said something to the effect of asking for a referral doesn't work.
Yeah.
Can you kind of expand on that? Because get it and I don't get it.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, what Carl said is, you know, if you ask me for the names of, you know, certain people, you're not going to have the best names in on the top of your head, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to just say, oh, yeah, go call John, Jane, and Jeff, you know? And so that's a problem. And also, you're going to be very guarded over your best referrals, right? You're not going to say, hey, you should talk to my mom.
Or, right.
You know, you should talk to my brother. Well, maybe I'm going to give Carl's name to a few people that I don't want to care just to troll Carl. But the point is, even with that, is you're very guarded over those resources. And instead, you are going to give those names when you want to help those people.
Sure.
When your mom really does need help, you want to send her to the best person.
Exactly.
Right? So those opportunities come up when, you know, your mom actually needs something. And
right.
So for that matter, you need to really set your mind in sort of what we call the referral mindset and prep you for that opportunity when it comes up.
You want to make that agent look very referable.
Exactly.
Makes sense. So can you describe how your target customer, an insurance agency, benefits from Rock Referrals? I mean, what do they see?
Yeah. So, I mean, from the onset, they're going to get a lot more visibility into their customers. They're going to be able to, as soon as they, you know, start with Rock Referrals and put their data in, they're going to see who their best customers are.
Okay.
It's interesting because if you go talk with an insurance agent and you say, hey, where do you get your business? They're going to say from referrals. But then if you say, well, who are your referral sources? Who are the people who are actually referring you so that you can go get more from those
right.
people? And you might be lucky if they say two or three, you know, people. But there's not a system that exists outside of Rocket Referrals where you can go and say, hey, here's my referral sources. And those are the people that you want to get testimonials from and online reviews, and you want to send them loyalty cards. And by the way, those are the people that are more likely to buy more of your products. So if they have auto insurance, but they don't have home insurance, maybe you should cross sell to those people because
right.
they're more likely to buy. And so it's using our data and our algorithms to start to supplement those, you know, communications. But even though if I'm having this same conversation with an insurance agent, you know, or any business, you know, what happens is their eyes kind of glaze over and they think, okay, well, that's great if I have the data, but how do I actually communicate with
right.
people? How do I actually get them to do those things? And that's where we come in, is we're not just looking at the data. And from day one, I've always told everyone, is like, we're not going to just put fancy charts and graphs and data in front of people. Instead, we're going to take that data and we're going to actually use it. We're going to, instead of just telling people who they should communicate with,
you're going to do it.
We're going to do it for them.
Yeah.
And it's extremely important to do that for these insurance agencies that are small to medium-sized businesses that do not have a marketing team, that might not understand all the nuances that go into how to ask for Google reviews, the timing, or the message, what to say to have the biggest impact on their clients.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting, because even if they had a marketing team, mm-hmm. all but the biggest teams are not going to have the knowledge you guys have. That's mm-hmm. one of the things I ran into in my first automation world was we had automated 500 or 1,000 of a certain kind of a business. Mm-hmm. And then we walk into one and they'd only been there once. They never automated. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they just don't have the knowledge. They don't
Absolutely.
Know what you guys know.
You know, and that's interesting. You bring up knowing what we know when it comes to the industry and data, because we've been able to collect millions of data points specifically targeted to why clients want to remain with their insurance agency, why they want to refer them, what are the positive things, the negative things, from the perspective of the client to the insurance agency, not the carrier. Now, this is really valuable information, because with this, we know the frequency of the communication, what to say, when to say it, and have an impact on what we're trying to achieve with it. A lot of times, you know, without this data, you don't know what clients want to hear, what they want to say. So we've implemented a lot of these best practices back into our communications that we send
yeah,
out.
Yeah, so your first client's still benefiting, is getting improvement benefits.
Absolutely.
Additional benefits, simply because mm-hmm. you've matured the system.
Yeah, imagine being able to flip switches and knowing that the best practices from millions of data points and years of experience in the industry then goes out to your clients. And that's what we've been able to cultivate
sure.
over the last 6 or so years.
So you must get a lot of feedback from users on, we want this new feature or this capability, and I know I've experienced it too. What process do you use to decide which ones make it into a product?
That's a fun one. I think that we're always trying to do the thing that's the best for our customer, which is not always the exact thing that they're asking for. And, you know, you could really get into a lot of trouble by just doing one thing for one loud customer that might
oh, yeah.
not be the right thing for all of the other customers. You can waste a lot of development time. You can, you know, create regressions or issues for other customers or other parts of the system.
Yeah, because they're loud doesn't mean they're right.
Exactly. Yeah. So every time we get a feature request or anything, we do our homework, right? We do our research. We may test it ourselves. But we're also looking internally to our team, right? They talk with a lot of customers every day. And so not all customers are saying, hey, you should do this.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go to our team and, you know, say, hey, what customers are doing really well or what customers are not doing really well? And we just look at their accounts and their you know, their data,
yeah.
and we listen to things and we come up with our own ideas,
sure.
too.
Sure.
You know, that's a pretty tough thing. But my sort of fallback is always answer no first. If I can say no 20 times and the 21st time they're still with me,
yeah.
then they must really want that and they can't find it somewhere else.
We used a customer advisory council because we were selling to Budweiser distributors, and there were thousands of them in the country at the time. And, you know, you'd get these guys that were really loud and,
mm-hmm.
and boisterous. So we need this. And when we did our customer advisory conference, we actually turned over our list of potential ads to the council and said, you guys force rank them and you tell us which ones you would actually
mm-hmm.
give money for,
mm-hmm.
which ones have value. And the loud guys got talked down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you don't know what you're talking about. And we'd leave the room. We'd let them have the debate without us in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually quite beneficial because it cut a lot of the stuff that says, that doesn't make me money.
Yeah.
That doesn't solve a problem. It was yeah. just a nice to have.
And frankly, we don't want to do what everyone else does.
Nope.
You know, we want our company to be different, our culture to be different, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But if we see another company or a demand from a customer, I know we're getting away from just,
that's right.
you know, but we try and take a different approach on what we feel is the best approach. And
so can I give an example?
Yeah.
We've had customers ask us to do newsletters to their clients since we started Rocket Referrals, that, you know, can we do email newsletters? Can we do these? And, you know, every time we look at the stats for email newsletters and they just are abysmal. They are not good and they don't connect with people on a personal level,
right? Well, unless you're hitting it on interest, right?
Yeah.
I The ones I get because I've asked for them and I like it. Yeah. And I unsubscribed everything else because I don't want it in my inbox.
Yeah, they have to be really good and they have to be consistent. Yeah. And that's another problem that our customers have is staying consistent with content. You know, if they had a newsletter, they're going to be able to fill it. So we knew that that's not the right answer. You know, newsletters is not the best thing to do. So we'll be releasing a new feature to Rocket Referrals very soon that we're calling Rocket Connect. And essentially, it's a way for agents and customers to be able to connect with customers sort of off cycle. What we found out is we looked at the problem that they had. Why do you want newsletters, basically?
Right.
And they want them because they want to communicate with their customers. They didn't care about communicating the actual content and the thing. They want more touch points, right? And so we said, how can we come up with a way to give your customers more touch points at a time in between a renewal and all of these other things?
Right.
So what Rocket Connect is a thing for agents and our customers to be able to go online and pull curated content from our partners.
Mm-hmm.
And they essentially say, hey, this is really good content. I want this one, this one, this one, this one. It goes into a library, and then our algorithm finds people that need an additional touch point and then article that matches their profile and sends them
things.
So that's why, you know, we hear the problem, but we don't necessarily do their solution.
Sure.
And one more thing on that. From a marketing perspective, it does raise an interesting challenge because, you know, in this industry, people are looking for specific features, and we don't want to just do it the way that they are asking for. So we have to show them a better
way.
Right?
The way they're asking
for. But if we say, no, we don't do that. No, we don't do that. And we keep saying that, then they'll think, well, that's not what I want. So we have, so a lot goes into changing what the perception in the industry of what they want is. And that's the process we've done over the course of years, writing for magazine articles, telling them, showing them research and why this is a better approach. Well, so we try and get to the root of what they're looking for. They're looking to grow their agency. They're looking to improve retention and get more referrals. They're not looking specifically for a type of referral. I mean, they might ask for a feature that says, I want a button on my subject line for people can submit referrals. We know that doesn't work. So we'll say, no, we're not going to do that feature. So we have to say, what you're really looking for is more referrals. Here's how we go about it. But the challenge is, how do you communicate that to them efficiently in a way that they understand it so that they'll still want your product, right? That's the hard part, because we want to change the industry. We want to give them what they want.
So we've been launching Rocket Connect for the last 9 months, and we've been doing it through content, right? Mm-hmm. And no one has ever heard the word Rocket Connect until this podcast, by the way. So Carl has been writing for magazines and talking about how it's important to be a content curator instead of a content creator, and, you know, all of these things. And we hope that when we launch it, that story, you know, makes sense.
Well, you're backing up what you're saying.
Exactly.
It makes perfect sense. Yep. So the last time I was in your office, I'm going to change gears just a little bit.
Yeah.
You have these large monitors on the wall,
mm-hmm.
and it's real-time dashboard. It's your key metrics.
Yeah.
It's what's going on in your business.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they're still there, and I want to ask, do those things intimidate new team members?
I hope not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that what I want people to know is that when they come into the office, that this is the real deal. Like, yes, we feel like a startup. We have a lot of the things, you know. We wear blue jeans and comfy t-shirts and comfy shoes, and we have an office dog, and, you know, all of these things. But at the end of the day, we're very serious about what we do.
Yeah, and your serious work counts.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, you know, we are the best, and we want to continue to be the best. And we have to keep an eye on what we're doing. So I want to make sure that in every area has their own specific type of dashboard, right? Marketing has their things. In the dev area, we're looking at how many people are online right now. What's our SQL server doing? Do we have any exceptions? And when they see it, I want them to get on it, right? So sometimes it's, you know, playtime and we have a good time, but also at the end of the day, everybody knows that we're here to be the best. And that's because we want to bring our customers the best. And so we have to keep an eye on what we're doing. I don't say that to new employees when we come in and show them the board. And I don't say, hey, we're here to be the best and all this kind of stuff. But I think it helps demonstrate that a little
bit. Well, you can say or you can do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, doing always is more
right.
important. You live your culture, you'll get your culture.
Yeah.
So you're getting ready to bring on your 30th team member. How have you both handled that growth? Because I remember it was just the two of you.
Well, the way I look at it is we're so much in the weeds. I mean, we're in the trenches every day. And sometimes you just need to step back and realize how much growth and progress you've made over the last several years. And for me, it is remarkable. I mean, when I look at where we've come and where we've started, but it's, again, every day I'm not, I guess, appreciating. I appreciate it, but I'm not reflecting on it every day. So it's important to step back and kind of reflect on it.
It is important.
And a lot of hard work went into it. I mean, my God, but we're continuing. We're still putting that work in. We still, in my opinion, I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission here with my brother and the rest of our team, and we're going to accomplish it to be the best company, the best communication platform, the best software company in Iowa, if not the country, if not the world, and that's what we're working toward.
Sure.
So to me, yes, we've made a lot of progress, but we still have a long way to go, and we just always have to make sure that we have that focus, and we know where we're headed, and we relay that to the rest of the team and continually push forward.
And it is a challenge because you're coming up on 30, and when you get to the bigger number, the next digit up, when you hit 100 and then 500, mm-hmm. it gets harder.
Yeah.
And the culture will change because it's a different company when it's 500 people.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. you can keep the mission. I went through it going from around 100 to 5,000. And most of the way through, we kept the mission clear. Mm-hmm. And everybody else, you know, people all over the world, you've got cultural differences, time zone differences, mm-hmm. but as long as they understood the mission.
So what I tell my employees is that we're going to show the world that it's possible to be a great company as you grow.
Yeah.
That it can be done.
It can be done.
It's going to be hard and we're going to have struggle, but we're going to show people how to do it.
I'm guessing you guys have a little fun once in a while, too, though.
We do.
I'm guessing you have a lot of fun. So speaking of your growth, you recently found out you were number 481 on the Inc. 5000 Index and the fastest growing software company in Iowa. What does that mean to you both? That's a big deal, by the way. That is a really big deal. You should both be congratulated.
Thank you
very
much.
What does it mean?
You know, I think that when I think back about when I saw the ranking, where we were, I mean, I knew we were going to rank high when mm-hmm. we looked at, you know, last year's stats and what we had. But when I saw 481 and we were in the top 500, I was so excited to tell my team, right?
Sure.
Because I wanted them to be part of that. And, yeah. you know, that's the only thing that goes back into my mind is thinking, man, I can't wait. And so Carl and I were like, when should we tell people and how should we tell them? And
sure.
We had a couple of people, like, their jaws dropped, like, are you guys serious?
Yeah. They probably thought you were messing with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, like, no way,
what's
right?
What's the punchline?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that they thought that because what we do is we keep our heads down and we focus and we've been building this thing and we've been working, everyone's been working their tails off. And we've been doing it for, you know, our customers and for, you know, our team and for keeping everybody accountable to each other, not to reach 500 or to reach.
No, that's just a measurement.
It's just a measurement.
It's just a measurement. It's not the goal.
So it wasn't like something that they were striving for. So they were really surprised to know that all this hard work and everything that they've done and they put into it, you know, made it that.
Well, make sure you never put that one on your dashboard where we rank this year, because that means nothing.
That doesn't mean anything.
I mean, it's wonderful, but as far as running a company, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Exactly.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think people were also surprised because we don't generally seek awards and recognition publicly because it's not really where our focus is.
Well, I don't think it's not who you two are. I know you a little bit.
Yeah.
I think I've gotten to know you.
It's not who you are. It's just not. To me personally, the recognition means a lot when it comes internally from your team and your company and also the community, because we do want to start giving back more and more, and we have some plans on how we're going to do that. But again, like, some awards are subjective. This one is more of an objective measurement of growth based on revenue. It didn't take very long to apply for.
It's a comparison to your peers.
Exactly. Yeah. And therefore, we thought it would be worth applying, and it didn't take long to do so. And, you know, we ranked pretty high, and it was a great motivator for our team. I think it's also going to help with future employees, hopefully, with the recognition a little bit.
Can I tell you something that felt better to me than getting
sure.
that award? I was at a conference Monday and Tuesday, and I was in a breakout room, and
there were several agents in there, and I kind of snuck him back. I like to kind of keep an eye on what customers are saying and what they're learning and that kind of thing so that we can build that stuff in our product, right? That's why I was there. But every 30 minutes, someone's raising their hands like, hey, I use Rocket Referrals and I do this and that. And I was just blown away because I go back to thinking of the time Carl and I are sitting on our couch and we're thinking of this idea and this program.
Yeah.
And now it's actually out there in the wild and people are talking about it and it's helping
people
them.
People are talking and you up. Yeah.
It's like working for them and it's doing something, you know, great. And that right there felt really good to me personally. So
No, that's, you're absolutely right. And you're it's cool because people can directly measure the impact. You're impacting top line and bottom line, mm-hmm. which is a great place to be as a business because there's a lot of great businesses out there that don't have that ability to say, I moved your top line, I moved your bottom line.
Yeah.
And especially if you didn't do it by cutting something, which we all need to trim when trim is required, but constant haircuts just lead to baldness, right? I mean, you got nothing when you're done, right?
Yeah.
So we've talked around this, but how do you define company culture?
I'm not sure that it's something you can necessarily define as something that you live. When Carl and I started Rocket Referrals, before we had a name of the company, before we had an idea for what our product was going to be, we said, who are we? What are we going to do? And so we came up with three core beliefs. And I know this sounds really corny and, you know, that kind of thing, but we said, we don't have a mission statement. Any mission statement I've ever read before is like shareholder value, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff, right? Well, we said, who are we going to be? What are we going to do? And so we came up with these three core beliefs. One of them is we believe that technology should work as you expect, but better than you ever imagined. That was our way of saying, hey, we're going to build something better than people ever thought it could be done. We believe that software and tools should be available to any business. Especially enterprise grade software that typically is only available to the largest
top 10%,
companies.
Yeah.
And then we believe that there's greatness in everyone and we want to build software to bring out that greatness. And we have said, if we do those three things and if we stay true to those, then we're going to feel good. We know that our, you know, company is going to grow and that's sort of our guiding light. Those are the three things that we live by. Every feature we do, we say, how can we make this better than what people would expect it to be?
Right.
And, you know, when we get customer service, when we have customer issues and things, that whole greatness in everyone, we have a lot of empathy for our customers and understanding what they are. And, you know, the value of what we bring, you know, we want to bring a tremendous amount of value and have Rocket Referrals sort of be the no-brainer. And, but that kind of just is the thing that we use to guide everything.
You're speaking to what I know, the guy that's the CEO of Cloudflare and his name escapes my mind, but he spoke at the Monetary Conference, his keynote. And he said, culture is what you do, not what you say. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a simple way of saying it's what you live.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious, Carl, anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we try and implement into the culture. Number one is I want everybody that is working with us to feel like they're genuinely part of the team and that they contribute and that they have a path forward and growth and can achieve the goals that they're looking for. That's one thing. We also believe that we want to put a very healthy environment in place, and we've done some things recently to try and facilitate that. Every Thursday, we bring in a home-cooked meal, a vegan home-cooked meal for everybody, so that we share that around a meal in the conference room every week. We recently put together a full gym for our employees down in part of our new office space, which for a company our size is, you know, they didn't expect that, but these are the type of things that we want to give to our team members, to people working with us.
Well, I think back to our core beliefs, even these things go to our employees, even though you might expect a company to have some kind of health and wellness thing because anymore you kind of have to, right? But what they didn't expect is for us to put in this like really top of the line gym for 30 people.
Check it out.
For 30 people, yeah. Right? And so,
and by the way, you guys both use the gym.
Oh yeah, we use the gym.
I built it. I mean,
You're a very fit person, which is an understatement. But you guys both live a very healthy world.
Yeah,
well, we have to.
It's keep your brain fresh.
It's also other things too. Are integrity, togetherness, these type of things. And when you walk in our office and you talk to our employees, they're very energetic. They're bright. they're bright as in smart, but you can just see it in their eyes. They're bright. They're present. They want to be there. We all have a common goal. And that type of energy flows through our company. And sure, that's the kind of thing that we want to keep bringing on. We're very selective when we hire people. And the number one thing we look at is culture. Are they going to be a good culture fit? Mm-hmm. Obviously, are they going to be good workers? But if we bring in a good worker, that is going to clash with everyone else. And that doesn't mean that we don't want to bring in diversity. We also bring in a lot of diversity.
We have a very diverse team.
A very diverse team, yeah. And we continually grow that out. We know that there's strength and power in that, and we want to continually grow in that, expand that as well. So we want to walk around. I have a hoverboard that I kind of go around, because we have a big office upstairs, yeah, right? So I kind of spin around there a lot. And
and fall.
I fall.
Run into things.
I'm not afraid to fall down. Yeah. But when I talk to everybody, and I want to make sure that they have that fire and that light in their eyes.
Sure.
And if they don't, we'll talk to them, and I'll make sure that it's there. Yeah. Because I know that everybody has to feel like they have a path forward, and that they're not just a cog in a machine. And right. And we know that if we can give them that opportunity and hire the right people, it's going to be best for the company anyway. So there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, we talk a lot about the culture because it means so much to us. But we're continually expanding it. We're still improving ourselves.
I'm hearing is you're living it.
Yeah.
You're out there doing it.
It's my favorite part.
So what part of the culture does charm represent? And tell us about charm.
Well, Charm's my King Charles Cavalier. She's a beautiful 10-year-old dog that roams the office all of the time and asks for treats and pets. That's basically her love language are those two things. But she, I guess if you could symbolize what she represents, is a laid-back culture, but also getting work done. I mean, I don't know. I guess she doesn't represent that. She represents more of the comfort, you feel like almost like you're at home when you're in her mm-hmm. office with her yeah. running around. You know,
so that's what it would mean to me. To me, having obviously you can't have a hyperactive dog in the room, mm-hmm. but there's something comforting about a pet. Now, yeah. I'm a cat person, so I know you guys have had cats
absolutely.
Too. But it makes a house a home, and
it
I think
does.
In a lot of ways, having that office pet makes it more like being at home.
Today I opened up the door, and we had one of our team members, Devin, was there. She opened the door, and Charm just goes running through, and they're like, oh, hey, Charm, and everyone's petting her, and it just adds this element
sure.
to the company.
Brings them together on a non-work
it
issue.
It does,
it's
yeah.
like they're hanging with
and
Charm.
She's just
but
the
interesting thing is we didn't get Charm to do that.
No, I know you didn't.
We got Charm because Carl loves Charm, yeah. and Carl loves to bring her to the office, mm-hmm. and yeah. you know, and it's an interesting thing going back to, we don't do these things in our culture to
I'm
make
going to
it
intentionally
yeah.
add a
yeah.
dog
I'm not
to my
add
culture.
An office.
No.
Like these are the
Let's
things
have a meeting and add a dog.
Well, so we used to have yeah. an office cat named Nova.
I remember
and,
Nova.
Poor Nova would take a dump every time someone came in. And then we started to hire people with cat allergies
yeah, well, that
and
doesn't
things
work
like
out.
That.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So we, you know, now Nova lives on a goat farm in Chicago and she's
oh, nice.
Happier there than anywhere. But we didn't like have an office. We thought it would be fun to have an office cat, and it was for a while.
So, looking back, you guys bootstrapped your company.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that, which it has its challenges.
Yeah,
was it the right way to go?
Well, I think that it was the only way for us to do it. In our eyes, it was one of those things where. We thought that we had to raise money for some period of time because that's just what startups did. And the way that you had to go about raising money wasn't the way that Carl and I work and how we think. And
right.
We knew what we were doing was going to work because we'd already tested things and people wanted to see more, you know, tests. And the funny thing is, there was lots of times where maybe we were offered a little bit of money here and there for a certain amount of equity, and we would think, my God, we could go make that money. Let's, instead of taking that person's money, let's go make it in revenue because
right.
it will mean more.
Right.
Yeah, that means more hours, it means more sacrifice and things like that, but the hours and not buying personal things and instead using that money to put into the
company. Just so everybody knows, these guys don't drive Lamborghinis.
No, we don't. and we instead put it into the money. That was our investment.
Right.
So
it's your time.
I think I'll speak a lot about bootstrapping companies someday, and that's going to always be my passion, is to help, you know, people with that.
Well, and it's fun for me to read. I've been reading a lot of very, very powerful VCs blogging about the ridiculous valuations mm-hmm. that are happening right now. In mm-hmm. fact, one of the recent trends is something called mega seed rounds, or $5 million seed rounds. You know, in my mind, seed rounds are 500K, and mm-hmm. now they're 5 million. It's just nuts. And a very, very famous one said, you know, a lot of you guys and gals out there doing startups need to think about bootstrapping it, because I don't know why you need all this money.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, when, you know, back a long time ago, if we wanted to raise money, we had to search for investment money. We had right. to go reach out to them and try and ask for their time or whatever. And we did look for it initially, like I said, because, or as Tori said, because it was something that we thought we had to do. We didn't do it very long. But now, after bootstrapping and being successful in this regard, we have investors reaching out to us.
Sure.
And when we talk to them, they say, you know what we like most about you guys is the fact that you were able to do this without any investment money, that you're hard workers. They want to know that the founders and the people working there are able to put the work in and accomplish the goal. If they throw money at something that's unproven, then, you know, they don't know what's going to happen, yeah. right? So but it is a challenge. If you're a single founder of a company and you don't have the skill set to develop out a product and
exactly.
do everything else, then you don't have the cash reserves, it's almost like there's no other option to raise
right.
money. But if that's the case, we suggest, or at least I suggest, raising money from someone that has the aligned with what you believe in and that is going to not pull you into the wrong direction.
Well, and I think a lot of people forget that I'm an angel investor. Beth and I angel invest and regularly. We want our money back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an implication to that. That means you've got to find a way to monetize your business. And not everybody should monetize their business. I mean, some people have to. It's just mm-hmm. the way it is. And, mm-hmm. and others go in saying, this is a 5-year run. This company is going to grow this much. And I've got to sell it in 5 years, because if I don't sell it, it'll probably fail without becoming something massively bigger or part. I'm building it to be a part of Google someday.
Yeah,
I'm building.
That's,
mm-hmm, yeah. And that's okay. If your mm-hmm. strategy is to build something mm-hmm. that Facebook's going to really want, that's great. But that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm. So. Our idea is to build a profitable, successful, wholesome company. And we know that it will have a place if it's an acquisition. If it's not, I mean, we know where we're headed. But if you're profitable and you're successful, mm-hmm. That's really all. That's what people are looking for ultimately anyway.
Yeah, that's all you need. I mean, seriously, there's some wonderfully profitable private companies out there that nobody really knows the numbers, but there's nothing wrong with them,
mm-hmm.
and they just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So you've both been part of the startup ecosystem here in Des Moines for at least 6 years. What changes have you seen since you started?
You know, that's a tough question for me to answer, because I think that Carl and I have been very focused on Rocket Referrals. Mm-hmm. I think that it would be fair to say, if you talk with a lot of people in the community and you'd say, how involved is Rocket Referrals in the startup community? They'd be like, Rocket what?
Yeah, who?
Rocket
mm-hmm.
who? And I think that it's just a timing issue for us. And when you're bootstrapping a company, like we just talked about, you don't have a lot of money to go hire a bunch of people
right.
until you have customers. So you have to focus on customers. So it's
right.
where we put our attention. So if you ask me what's changed, I'm going to give you like the really super high level view. From my perspective, I think that you will start to see Carl and I and Rocket Referrals be more involved in the community mm-hmm. as we have an opportunity to do that. And it becomes a more important part of my job. I think that, you know, when we're very small, my job is a lot of other things.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
But my job is to also remove those things and put people in those positions that are better than me.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, that will change over time. I'll be more involved in the community because I need to, you know, have a name for Rocket Referrals in the community, right? So,
yeah.
And to build a community that would then in turn have better workforce and that kind of thing.
And well, I would like to think that there's been a shift away from Nerf darts and craft beer and ping pong tables. Not that there's anything wrong with those things,
yeah.
but a shift more toward rolling up your sleeves and getting the work done.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's what a startup in a business is. And it might be
right.
where we're from. I don't know. I mean,
no, you're right. There's that whole culture of what I call the frat house sorority culture, you know, that doesn't work.
So we had moved into a new space, and the building owner had a kegerator in the kitchen. And he said, hey, there's a kegerator in here. You guys are a startup. You're probably going to want that, right? And I said, no, get it out of here.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, but that's not who we are. We're more focused on health. And we know that there's a time and place for that. And we have events where we can drink. We're not saying don't drink.
You go out and have dinner and have a drink. That's fine. But you don't have to have it there all
day. But I think that to me was sort of like a cheesy, like, hey, we're a startup, there's beer. That's not who we are. No, we want to attract people who want to work on cool technology and build really cool products.
Not drink beer.
Cool beer. Yeah. Well, I don't mind, you know, people who drink cool beer, but I just want
But not during the work day.
Exactly.
And work is work, and there's got to be a separation.
And I mean, for me personally, I am naturally an introvert by nature, and all day I'm around people, which I love. And then at the end of the day, I feel like I kind of need, and even weekends, I need to kind of be by myself and absorb and get more energy. So if for me specifically, it's a lot of work to go out and try and build relationships with the community when I'm so involved during the day. It's more of just a mental thing. So I'm going to start making a focus of doing more of that stuff. I recognize that if we want to make the contributions to the community that we have our goals set on, then we need to do more of that type of thing and get more involved. And that's why we will start doing that now.
But we're only 30 people, so we're still pretty small.
That's true.
Well, Carl and Tori, thank you for being on Startup Stories.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. This has been great.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. Thanks for listening.